you need to look at the tools that it gave Alaskans, like the subsistence law, to help them control our future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McDaniels. Oh, would anybody else like to say anything this evening? We'll be meeting again tomorrow. Well, we're meeting at the Senior Citizen Center at 10 o'clock in the morning so that the elders can participate, and then we'll be back here at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon.
My name is Ken Chikunarok. I'm from White Mountain Native Corporation, and I'd like to ask, I was going to ask him a question on the fishing, commercial fishing permits. I was wondering why they never did open them up very much, and because,
this is a question for you, Mr. Magdans. You want to go to that mic just so you'll be in a position to answer. And maybe you could repeat the question.
Okay, in 1977, remember they opened the fishing permits for commercial fishing, and I don't remember when they closed it, and I was wondering if they were ever going to open up the fishing game permits for commercial fishing and see, there may be, our children or grandchildren that would like to commercial fish in the near future, and would like to know, see if they will open up the commercial fishing in the Golovin area, and if they're going to do anything about it.
Commercial fishing limited entry applies in this area only to salmon. The other fisheries, mm-hmm. like herring, are open at this point to anybody. I can't speak for the legislature, which, like Congress, would have the power to change any law that it created, but I haven't seen any sign that the legislature intended to reconsider or open for additional entry the limited entry salmon fishery. Mm-hmm. I think that it basically, as ANCSA did, was designed to set in place a system in perpetuity that would last forever. And it changed the rules for the resource from common ownership, or rather use of the resource from common ownership to private ownership, so that the use of the resource, at least, mm-hmm. is privately owned and transferred privately. And I don't know I don't see any sign that that's going to change in the near future for salmon. There are other fisheries that are open.
Okay, I've got another question. It's say the fishing game, say that the natives get more waterfowl than the people down in lower 48s, and the people down in lower 48s, they clear their lands and for roads, buildings, and all that other stuff they use it for, and they say that the natives in Alaska get more waterfowl, and that waterfowl on their flight south, let me restate myself. The fish and game say that the natives get more waterfowl than the people down in lower 48s, and they clear the lands for the waterfowl and stop where they stop on their flight south. And our lands up here haven't even been spoiled or cleared away to be built. And the U.S. government someday will run out of beef and chicken due to droughts of some kind, and our subsistence right may be and will be completely taken away, and what will our grandchildren do if that has ever happened?
Oh, maybe that's a rhetorical question. Do you want to comment on it, Mr. Magdans?
Well, I think you're right. I think it's basically a rhetorical question. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think,
it's just assumption of what might happen.
Mm-hmm.
I could say I recognize the concern.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank those who came and spoke tonight and the others who attended, and to say that we will reconvene at 10 o'clock at the Senior Citizen Center, and then we'll come back here at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. And welcome you all back at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, and any others who can hear my voice who want to come down and participate tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. And in the meantime, tomorrow we'll go to the Senior Center at 10 o'clock in the morning. So thanks very much.
On, much to worry about, much to work on. And who am I to tell anybody this when you already know? I must keep busy all the time. And trying to lead your people and helping them out all the time from day to day, running from one thing to the next. It's real hard. But we can always try again. And AFN really helped us out and made it possible of our land claims in 1971. But now we are facing another big hurdle. Who is going to be strong at that time? Who is going to be willing to stand in front of people? Who is going to be strong and know how to lead? Only time will tell. And we must tell and encourage our young people to keep right on and know what it's all about. And on top of it, I am so glad of our education, our schools and universities, and everything that our government provides for us. That is enabling our people to know how to put their own ideas across. They didn't have it when first white people started coming around. Our people didn't know how to deal with new people that were coming around because they did not speak their language, and these people that came in did not know how to speak to them, too. Thank you. I made this pretty long.
Well, thank you very much.
My name is Karen Dixon, and I'm a shareholder of Council Native Corporation, newly elected president of Council Native Corporation. I'd like to say that I agree with Gary Longley's testimony and Lila Oman's testimony. I feel that the Native Land Claims Act has had a significant impact on the Native people in that it has given them money and land and the power to do what they will with it, whatever they decide is fair for all people. One thing that we must remember is what, quote, the old folks have taught us, that we all have to learn to live together, that the prejudice that I feel has come about from the Native Land Claims Act, we must set that aside and continue to make things smooth for the coming years. It's easy to sit back and say, well, years and years ago, when the Native Land Claims Act was first originated. It's easy, hindsight is better than foresight, right? It's easy to sit back and say, well, we didn't know this and we didn't know that, so it's time to become educated, to learn all that we possibly can, and to look to the future and make provisions for the afterborns, for the people that were unknowledgeable of the Native allotments, the BLM Native allotments. We need to educate the young people because they are the ones that are going to take over in the coming years.
There are people that really put meaning to it, made me realize what's going wrong. Now, the question I have is, why did the state make selections on the natives' selection, took over on the coastline especially, where natives made their living? They already had their campsites there, and they made them into cemetery sites. Where that really belongs to the native, because that's, I believe our buried fathers would want their land to go to their fortune, you know. And that's something I can't understand. And there's another one. These so-called miners, these offshore miners, come around to our villages, and then they do mining. They created a wreck down Garvin, and then they didn't clean up after them. And what that created was a navigational hazard. Why couldn't those mining companies go and clean up their mess after they contaminated our area? That's all I have.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you. Certainly.
My name is June Peterson Kugelman. I have two Eskimo names, Akpeluruk and Akusin. I was glad I have two uncles here who spoke already. My father is from the Council area, born in the Council, raised Council, Fish River, White Mountain area. My mom is from the Quebec area. I have a big family who lives there, relatives. Right now, I've been on the board of directors for Council Native Corporation for the last 3 years, and all these years since 1971, I've always tried to be a neutral person, where you look on both sides of an argument type of thing. And in the last couple of years, to me, I can see a lot of problems already that, you know, when somebody mentioned about barracudas coming, I think some of them are already here. At least I can see it from our local corporation, Native Corporation. And the other thing is, my feeling is that when I get older and when my kids want to start living up here, or I have other family, I have nieces and nephews, and if they have children, I want them to be able to say that this is their land too, and then not people today being real hasty and wanting to get rid of the land, not wanting to get rid.
I
And I was wondering if there was any way to extend council's land allotment, White Mountain allotment, Gullivan, Illum's. Illum goes into the area of fish, Gullivan goes up and hunt. And I was wondering if there's any way to extend the allotments so we can cover that area too. Because I don't think that was enough.
You're talking about the land selected
by the village and
by the village.
Yeah.
Whether you can extend that.
Yes.
Well, I don't think so. If you've already completed your selections, that is, if you've got no more, if you've already completed your selections, I don't see how you can extend.
Is there any way we can put a stipulation where we can extend our village allotments? I mean, could we do it now before 1991?
I don't see how.
You can always appeal it. You can always appeal it.
My name is Carl Ashenfelter, and I'm from the White Mountain Native Corporation area. I get frustrated over the idea that some other country came in here and took our land from us without even consulting the natives. We had no say-so in the Statehood Act. People from the outside come in here and their numbers alone were enough to pass the Statehood Act, I think, and I can't see where that's legal. We can't. Basically, what the America did in this case, and this whole process that even ANSCA. Our natives, this is the first time in 13 years that I've had anything to say about what happened, what did happen, or what's happening. What I'd like to see is about more natives assert themselves and say, this is our land, and if it is ours, we should be able to tell the people in Washington that the conditions that we want in reference to our land, we should organize statewide and say what we want, not tell them not let them tell us what we in other words, we can't even have any say so or very little say so over our own land. They dictate to us as to what we can do on our own land. It shouldn't be that way. That's basically what I've got to say. I think us Natives, we ought to organize statewide and present a stronger voice.
And to find out how you people feel about the land claim settlement, 1991, subsistence, sovereignty, all of these questions, and to write a report that I hope will be helpful to you people. to write a report that I hope will be helpful to you people here in Alaska, and to Native people and their governments in other countries around the world. Because we are trying to see what has happened here in Alaska about land claims and what can be done about what are seen to be flaws, defects, deficiencies in the land claim settlement here in Alaska. I think you know Mary Kenswick, who is traveling with me, and Jim Sykes, who is running the sound equipment. We're taking everything down that is said so that there will be a permanent record of what Alaska Natives have to say about ANCSA, and there will be a transcript made, and it will be sent to the local corporation and the local IRA and the other Native organizations in Nome and in the region. And I will be writing a report that will be made public next summer, and in it I will set out your concerns about ANCSA and my views about what can be done and what ought to be done. And the ICC, the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, and the World Council of Indigenous Peoples will be able to go to the United Nations with that report if they wish. But I hope, in addition, it will be a report that is constructive and helpful and that Alaska Natives can use in deciding for themselves what changes they think should be made in the land claim settlement. Well, we had a very good meeting this afternoon. About 25 people spoke, and a great many more attended, and I look forward to what you people have to say this evening. When you speak, if you would like to come up here and sit right here by this microphone, that would be very helpful to us, because it means everything you say can be recorded. If you'd rather go to that microphone over there in the middle of the room, that's fine too, but whatever suits you. Well, I think that I've said enough this evening, we're open for business.
I'm Gibu Jamal. I'm from Koyak. In 1982 and 1983, I was involved in subsistence research of the Seward Peninsula, Eskimos living in lifestyle. My research was done basically of one village of some 450 inhabitants. This village is considered one of the most traditional villages on the Seward Peninsula. I interviewed some 77 individuals in this research.
Can you give me the name of the village?
Shishmaref. Where, when, how, why they hunt. Most of these individuals were the elders. These people are probably last generation with some expert knowledge of their land. They have names for every stream, river, hill, etc. They have knowledge of when and where the birds eat in spring and fall, where the walrus comes to eat, when the seals are nearby, where to pick the berries. These people can tell you how they hunt, and they eat enough, they hunt enough, so that they can have some more to hunt for the next time. If these people can utilize and control their hunting, fishing, and trapping, then I don't understand why they can't control their own land rights. With either state or federal government controlling land, then they are controlling the Eskimos hunting. When they control all this, they are telling us, you only can eat moose when we say so. What if the moose season is not timely enough? Maybe we need longer season. Sometimes moose don't come too close to the village, or when they do come around, it's the wrong sex. So if the state or federal government want to govern our land, maybe if they correlate with elders and councils of villages before making decisions and regulations, then things would work out a lot better for both parties. So if these state or federal governments regulate, then they should be hiring the local people instead of bringing in their own from outside. I think that all people know that the man who knows his job is the best man for the job. The natives know their land better than any USGS BLM man. So these government people hire their own people. How do they know about the land? The knowledge they have now may be limited, and where they get this knowledge is from the natives. I believe that hiring local natives for local jobs is number one priority in any village or town. Thank you.
Can I ask you a couple
couple of questions.
Yes, sir.
How many people did you interview altogether?
77 in Shishmaref alone.
Did you interview people in other villages as well?
Yes.
I see. And when you're... you've just told me that you think that Native people should be able to decide for themselves when to hunt and what to hunt and how best to ensure that they don't overhunt or overkill, to make sure that the resource is preserved and not diminished. Tell me what you think, or what the people you interviewed thought about how that is to be done. In other words, if they think they're the people to do it, would they want the fish and game people and the federal people just to give up their hunting and their supervision of hunting and fishing activities? Or, in other words, how would they go about it?
To most of the elders I talked to, they mostly chose state instead of the federal government governing regulations of fish and game. And what they're trying to say is maybe if they talk to them first sometimes in some things, or then, you know, they wouldn't have to fight so hard for it.
Mm-hmm. I take it that Shishmaref, being a traditional village, most of the people live by subsistence.
Yes, the majority of the village, yeah.
And they are engaged in hunting, certainly on corporation land, state land, and federal land, are they?
Yes. Bering Land Bridge.
Pardon me?
It's a National Preserve, Bering mm-hmm. Land Bridge.
Yeah. And subject to federal regulation, they have the right to go in there and take and hunt.
Yes. Yes.
Well, what conclusions did you reach about all this? You were doing the research, you were interviewing them. What did you decide for yourself at the end of it all about this?
Well, I learned a lot more than I decided anything on what the people felt. I'm just all with the people.
But before you went and did this, and compared to at the end of it all, what was the biggest impression you had about what ought to be done?
I think the people ought to listen to the villagers a lot more, the federal and state,
mm-hmm.
instead of sometimes overlooking something. They decide themselves in D.C. instead of maybe getting something from the people.
Instead of just announcing that as of a certain date you can't hunt moose and so on.
Yes. I'm just using this as a per se. It's nothing that...
Could you leave us a copy of your submission?
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm Peter Buck again, and I'd like to talk about the, in 1936, the government granted the Iowa governments of all of Alaska, and in that act, they claimed that the IRAs were a sovereign government. That means they can, as a sovereignty, they can control their own lands, control their own political policies, can control their own destiny as self-determination. And the IRAs in Alaska formed the United Tribes of Alaska, and in forming the United Tribes, they formed that thing about a policy to have the United Tribes of Alaska join the United Nations. So I'd like to know what impact will that have with the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act.
Well, I think what the United Tribes of Alaska are trying to do is to establish what's called consultative status with the United Nations. I don't know whether they've succeeded or not, but I suppose they will in due course. I think that the only thing that might prevent them is the question whether they are an international organization. United Tribes of Alaska is an Alaskan organization for the, I think. But it means that you have access to another forum to talk about these questions. But it seems to me the most important place to talk about sovereignty for Alaska native governments is in Alaska and in Congress. The question of native sovereignty is not something that has come up only in Alaska. It's come up in many countries in recent years. Sometimes it's called sovereignty, sometimes self-determination, sometimes self-rule, sometimes home rule. The Eskimos in Greenland have obtained home rule. They have their own government that runs Greenland now. In northern Canada, the government of Canada has agreed to divide the Northwest Territories so that there will be an Eskimo territory, that is where the Eskimos will be the vast majority of the population and will in essence run the government. In Maine, the Congress made a settlement with the Indian people of Maine, the state of Maine, in 1980, and they agreed that the IRA governments in Maine would be recognized as by the federal government, and they would also be recognized by the state government. I mention these things just to show that there's an awful lot happening in an awful lot of places about sovereignty, and it may be that Alaska Natives and others should be looking at what's happening at these other places.
Well, thank you.
Hi, I'm Richard Atek. Thank you for this opportunity to say something about the Claims Act. I've worked from November of 72 for ANSCA corporations or ANSCA-related corporations, and I think I've thought about the question quite a bit as to what does ANSCA mean and what's it all about. And it's kind of a tough question. I would really be interested in your report, and particularly where the view as to what the younger people are saying. I was here this afternoon and it seemed like I didn't hear too much from what they said, and I'm particularly curious as to what they would say, since they will be the ones that inherit whatever we do, whatever mistakes we make or whatever we win. I don't think it's so much win or lose. I've thought about the Claims Act, and the only way it sort of makes sense to me is to try to think about what things would be like if it did not take place. I think a lot of people have asked about what it has given, and I think that maybe it hasn't, it has given something, it has not taken away anything that I can see. I think one of the side benefits of Angska that I really have appreciated is that it has provided a mechanism and a means of communication within the state. I think that whatever the case may be, the natives, particularly in this region, and I think for each region, have talked to each other and have learned of each other's common concerns. And I think that other than through the corporations, those concerns have been brought up with state and federal agencies. And I think there have been very many changes for the good as a result of people being heard. And I think it's includes sessions like these where people have a chance to say whatever's on their mind. I might add that the vehicles of the corporations, the regional corporations and the village corporations, were provided money, and I don't know that that was the best use of it, but I do know that money provides a means to for people to get their thoughts together for whatever purpose they may have. So that's one area, and maybe the most important one, that communication has been made possible. And I think we're just starting to hear from the older people, from people my age, and I hope to hear, hope that you hear from the younger generation, the next generation. Something that I was kind of struck by in reviewing the 1985 study very briefly, it recalled to my mind that at the turn of the century, the population of the state was about equal, about 100,000 natives and 100,000 non-natives. And at the present time, the natives are a minority by about 6-1, or 7-1, depends on who you count. But I think that the ANSCA, through the vehicle of the corporation, has allowed those concerns to be heard. And I would like to recall what Job said earlier this afternoon, that we are not yet conquered. And I kind of like that, that before we were conquered, that the ANSCA, Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act, took place so that there was a means to be heard. There's one area I think that I see the most conflict in, and of course that involves either the land or the law, whichever one you want to look at. And when I wonder what is this ANSCA corporation all about, I recall what one of our leaders said, which was probably the best explanation for me at the time, and I think still is now. And that was Martin Olson. And when somebody, he stated in somewhat along these lines that wasn't ANSCA, isn't this all about the idea that there were some Indians in the interior or natives elsewhere that had some land that they used? And isn't this about the idea that miners were coming in and taking that land? And that's when it started to make sense to me that before ANSCA, the natives did not have a written law. They had their own law, which nobody else respected because they didn't know about it, as far as I can tell. And without ANSCA, I'm afraid that the newcomers to the state would have continued to take land through the existing land laws.
And they felt that that these were criticisms of ANCSA that they wanted to avoid in making their settlement. The Indians in the Yukon Territory are still negotiating with the government of Canada, and they have already obtained agreement that where they have a certain where they take a certain percentage of the moose or the caribou, they will have that percentage in perpetuity, so that if the white population increases, they will continue to have the right to take the same percentage of the harvest as they take now. They made that agreement on some of the rivers too. I only mention that because they are some of the people who've been working on these problems since 1971, and it makes it worth your while, I think, to take a look at those other arrangements. In Australia, the natives are in northern Australia have worked out a settlement in the north where the elders hold the land in trust. That means it can't be sold, can't be transferred, and can't be taxed, and yet they're not under the supervision of the government, just as this recent settlement in Canada means that the trust that the Eskimos have for the land is not under the supervision of the federal government. In other words, they got away from the problem that that Indians in the lower 48 and in Canada face, that is, their land is held in trust by the federal government. That means it's safe from taxation and safe from any takeover, but they're under the jurisdiction, under the supervision to some extent of the government. So they're trying to get away from that and still preserve the immunity from taxation and the immunity from takeovers.
Is there any guarantee that this act that you're talking about in Canada and Australia, is there any guarantee that it will be put into ANCSA?
Well, no, none at all. I'm just saying that all of these things are happening right now in all of these places. You people started the ball rolling back in 1971. You know, yours was the first really important settlement in the modern era. Now everybody else is getting on the bandwagon, and they're, in a sense, benefiting from some of the things they've seen in ANCSA that haven't worked out as well as people had hoped, and I don't see why you can't at this stage, in looking at your own situation, say, the world changes and moves on, and we should have the advantage of changes in thinking and improvements that are made. That's all. Yes, sir.
Hello. I'm from, I represent Gullivan Native Corporation. And what I think about ANCSA is that I think their morale is pretty damn low, you know. They're sitting on their chairs, you know. They're making to 50,000 to 70,000 a year, you know. They're not doing a hell of a lot for our corporations, you know. It's not. They're not. I don't think they represent us very good. I disagree with them, you know. I'm against that, you know. They don't represent us very good. Forty percent of them went to AFN on the convention down Anchorage, and 30% of them went down there half drunk, you know. And that's no good, you know. And we're talking about our native people here in Nome, all over Seward Peninsula. That's no good. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
My name is Daryl Trigg. You know, over the years since the land claims, I've belonged to several different boards, including statewide boards and committees and governors, advisory committees and whatnot. But, you know, I looked at that statement that you guys sent out. In my opinion, you know, the ANCSA of 71 hasn't changed the socioeconomic status of Alaska Natives since its passage at all. You know, it raised high hopes. It was successful in dividing our people into many social and political camps. And it created, in most of the regions and villages, a very strong and sometimes bitter opponents, you know, both business and political. In a few cases, stockholders are still receiving minute amounts of dividends. And in the case of our elders, this often creates a problem when they are forced to reimburse Social Security for a year, and in some cases 2 or 3 years, because of those dividend amounts. And this is something that a lot of our elders can't afford, yet, you know, because of the dividend check they got, they've got to reimburse these people because they've considered income.
Getting dividends may make an older person ineligible for
Social Security for certain periods of time or for a certain amount of money, you know. So overall, ANCSA has done little to improve either the economic or social status of Alaska Natives, especially in the bush. You know. The majority of Alaska Natives had visions of receiving a fair amount for their lands that have been taken from them since the Western culture began its greedy migration into the Arctic. In the beginning, our ancestors welcomed these people. When the dangers of their influx into Alaska were finally realized, the gold miners and fur trappers already outnumbered our people. And this in part resulted from thousands of our people dying from diseases that the Western culture brought with them. Many people had visions of owning parcels of land on which they would be able to continue their subsistence hunting and fishing lifestyle. It seems that the United States government is more concerned that our migratory birds go south and be shot in farmers' fields and by skeet shooters than allowing us to continue our subsistence hunting to survive. It's always been our custom to allow the good hunters to catch more than the current limits and share with people who were berry pickers or green pickers or fishermen, who in turn would share their crop and catch with the hunters. You know, the lands that were to be ours are now controlled by a board of directors with restrictions on the use of that land by about every federal and state agency that exists. On top of that, we've got other organizations, mostly special interest, who worry more about the preservation of a blade of grass or a willow or some obscure hillside that maybe, you know, just maybe, 1 out of 50 million people may want to look at in its original state sometime in the future than about the preservation of our people, our culture, or our heritage. You know, they don't seem to recall that the Eskimo has lived and survived up here for thousands of years without scarring the land as much as they have in just a little over 100 years. Before they came with their laws and their regulations, there was always a good balance of game to feed our people. It's about time they looked at their own history and worried about the animals that they have eliminated and leave us to hunt and fish for subsistence.